This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
Good afternoon and welcome to Food for Thought. I'm Tracy Gregoire, and joining me today is the amazing Ken Kale. We are both filling in for, I'm not filling in for myself, but we're filling in for Carol today, who is still recovering from her concussion. Hope you're feeling better, Carol. We are on 107.7 WTPL in the Concord, Manchester, and Lakes region, as well as streaming all around the world on WTPLFM.com, which is powered by the Granite State Dairy Promotion. And anytime during the show, you can give us a call at 866-823-1077. We would love to hear from you. The number again is 866-823-1077. We would also like to welcome our live audience here at the Beacon Building in downtown Manchester at 814 Elm Street. So come on down if you're around and have lunch at the Midtown Cafe and watch the show. You can also go to foodforthoughtnh.com, and you can like us on Facebook at Food for Thought with Carol. So how are you doing today, Ken?
Tracy, I am terrific. How could you be anything but on a day like today?
The sun is shining.
Gorgeous.
It is nice. There's a little bit of a crispness in the air, but it's not too cold.
Not at all. The bright sunshine. Couldn't be better.
It is lovely.
Could not be better.
So, well, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been missing Carol.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope she's doing well. And I know she was in briefly today, and you told her to go home.
I did tell her to go home. I did. She looked like she was overdoing it. So I'm sure she's on her way out soon if she's not already.
But we wish her a speedy recovery. I did want to mention before we get to our first guest that tonight is the 10th annual Taste of Concord event at the Grapponi Conference Center in Concord. Just an incredible event that now, as I said, is in its 10th year.
And that's for the Boys and Girls Club, right?
Boys and Girls Clubs, of Central New Hampshire. And it's all you can eat. There are so many restaurants represented, over 35 great restaurants and businesses and microbrews, and our good friends at New Hampshire Distributors as well. It's just an incredible event, 5:30 to 8:30 tonight, and you can only get tickets at the door. That's the only way you can get them, but show up early because the crowds increase every year. I mean, word of mouth is the greatest advertising, and this thing has just grown and grown every single year, and all the proceeds go to a great cause. So check it out tonight, 5:30 to 8:30 at the Grapponi Conference Center in Concord.
It's always great to go to one place like that where you meet so many different businesses and local companies. So besides being a great event for the Boys and Girls Clubs.
It is, and you're absolutely right. I mean, it is a great networking event. Mm-hmm. It's a great great opportunity to see people you probably haven't seen since the 9th annual Taste of Concord. However, it's they've done a terrific job with this, and lots of money has been raised over the years. So I would recommend checking it out. Great food, drinks, music, silent auction, a top chef competition as well. So they've got all the ingredients.
And you mentioned microbreweries, brewers as well. And today we always love having Michael Hepley Pierce on.
Yeah,
with
absolutely.
What's on with MHP Untapped. He'll be on today on the show. And we also have a Linda Ditch of What's Cooking in Kansas. We love to hear from Linda. She'll be calling in the second hour. And then, of course, Shelley Walcott from Healthy Solutions Spice Blends. And I believe she's bringing in a little dish for us to taste.
Oh,
I always love that.
That'd be wonderful. Yeah.
Shelley likes to put together recipes that you can use with her spice blends based on just what you have on your fridge. So we always love to hear from Shelley. So great show today.
Absolutely so. And Michael can come on in whenever he would like, and we'll talk with him. I know he's got some great information to pass along. And again, if you'd like to give us a call, toll free 1-866-823-1077 is our number here on Food for Thought with Carol, but without Carol today, just Tracy and me, and Michael,
and we're gonna have a fun day.
We always have a fun day.
Good to be back. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Sorry about that. Had your mic down.
Am I live?
There you go. You're on the radio. Yeah.
We can hear you now.
Excellent. Thank you. It's good to be here.
We love having you here.
Yeah, I look forward to this.
So no guest today.
I had no guest. No, somehow I had gotten my signals crossed with my guest, and he actually showed up last week and texted me and said, how come nobody's here? I said, I don't know. I was supposed to see you next week. And then it turned out that it wasn't going to work out. But that's okay, because I have something wonderful to talk about, and I don't need any help talking.
All right. Fill us
so,
in.
For the last probably...
So Michael's going to take over the show. We're good now.
That's fine.
You're welcome to keep me in check.
I go feed the meter.
For about the last year and a half, the folks at Slate Roof Films have been working on a movie called Brew Hampshire, which was kind of started from a micro documentary about Throwback Brewery, which they had some association with. And it grew out of them doing essentially like an 8-minute movie on Throwback Brewery, to them realizing that this scene at large really demanded a higher level of documentation, and they wanted to make a full feature film out of it. And these people Megan and Brian are just amazingly talented filmmakers. They've worked with some really high profile names that I could drop if I knew them, but I'm not that guy. But they're very talented. They do beautiful cinematography. Even their stills are beautiful. So we got introduced to them from Tom Albright from Outhouse Ales. And I knew Tom from my homebrew club. We've known each other a long time. I had him on my podcast, and he said, hey, you should really talk to these folks over at Slate Roof Films. They're starting to work on this documentary called Brew Hampshire. And so we connected with them and had them in, and it was sort of a quid pro quo kind of interview where we had them as guests on the podcast. But when we were done, they put 17,000 watts of lights in our tiny studio and interviewed us right in our studio for the movie. So it was, wow. It was a really cool thing to happen. And we had, Jesse Mertz from Kettle to Keg, which is a local homebrew supply. He happened to be guest hosting, so he got invited. And they just ended up getting all these introductions down the road to the point where I think they had like 100 hours of footage.
Wow.
That's great.
And they just are putting, I'm not sure if this is the final edit, but it's certainly ready for public edit. And it's actually showing today and Sunday in Portsmouth.
Where?
So it's two different locations. Today at 3:40, it's showing at the Music Hall, which is at 28 Chestnut Street in Portsmouth, and that's 3:40 today. And then on Sunday at 2:10, it's showing at the 3S Art Space. And that's the one that I will be at, and I was actually just pulling up their address, and my iPad crashed out on me, so I'll have that address in a second. Here we go, 319 Vaughn Street in Portsmouth.
All right.
319 Vaughn Street. And this is all part of the New Hampshire Film Festival, which is actually going all week.
Oh, really? In Portsmouth?
In Portsmouth, yeah.
I wasn't aware of that. Thank you.
Yeah, nor was I.
They've
kept it a secret from us, Tracy. I don't know.
Filling out of the loop all of a sudden.
Really? Me too.
I don't know how long this event's been going on, or if this is the first. I don't think this is the first screening of this movie in its current form, but it's one of the first in New Hampshire, and I think it's going to be one of the last times for a while, because I think it's going to probably travel the circuits for a while, and I don't know when it'll be back.
Do you know? Can you give us a little more information about what it entails? About,
sure. Yeah? So I think what they realized is that they had kind of come onto the New Hampshire brew scene right as it was coming out of its second infancy, sort of. You know, there was a boom in the '90s, and it wasn't a huge boom, and a lot of those folks went away, and some of them became really well-established brands. And we were seeing this sort of second bloom of that happening, and they really just caught it as it was gaining momentum. So they interviewed everybody from folks that were longtime brewers. You know, they interviewed Peter, who opened Smutty Nose, 21 years ago, one of the pioneers in the state, one of the first brew pubs in the country, actually. But they also interviewed Tom Albright, who just opened up about a year and a half ago and is selling, I think he's doing 62 gallons at a time, two-barrel system. So he's, you know, about as small as you can really do on a commercial setting, and they interviewed everybody in between. And what they realized is that a big piece of the scene is the folks that are ancillary to the brewers. And so they interviewed us. They make great guests too. We had a lot of fun. I turned them on to Bert Bingle from Bert's Better Beers, and they interviewed him as well. I think they ended up interviewing about 20 breweries in the state. And I haven't even seen anything but still frames from our interview with them. So I don't even know what kind of a tapestry they've woven into. I think the last piece they actually shot was when my homebrew partner and I were brewing our last batch as homebrewers, kind of in preparation for buying our commercial equipment. And they were actually able to capture that whole brew session wonderfully. We saw some stills from that as well, but I haven't seen what they've done with it. So this will kind of be as much a
it's pretty exciting.
A discovery for me and my wife as well. She hasn't even seen the stills from it. So I encourage people to come out on Sunday, especially at 2:10 to the 3S Art Space in Portsmouth. If you know a New Hampshire brewer, I bet they were probably featured in this movie. And if you're a New Hampshire beer geek like I am, you're probably going to love to see a lot of your friends up on this screen. It's going to be a really great opportunity to meet some folks and see a cool movie about our culture.
When did you begin microbrewing?
So I started, I tried to put a date on it. I started homebrewing probably 6 years ago, maybe more than five, less than six. And my buddy Doc Jones had been homebrewing for a long time before he and I started homebrewing together, but he really hadn't kicked it up a notch. He was still sort of doing it at an entry level with entry level creativity. You know, he wasn't doing his own recipes. He was using prepackaged stuff on a very simple setup without a lot of control over variables. And we, about 5 years ago, really stepped up our game and started, went from using extract, which makes great beer, but it limits what you, how many variables.
It's a shortcut, basically.
It is, yeah. And it only gives you one dimension of flavor, which is malt. Mm-hmm. And so you have to add other grains, and it's just you get a lot more control when you're using all grains. So we made that switch and grew equipment-wise and pretty soon got pretty big for homebrewers. We were doing 15 gallons at a time, which is about as much as a homebrewer really ever wants to do, because what are you going to do with 30 gallons of beer?
Are there limits to that?
Yeah, for homebrewers, right? There is. There's a federal limit, which, of course, I stay well below. But that counts for every individual of age in your household. Each has that much that they're allowed to make.
Okay.
So, and I actually haven't homebrewed in a year, so I'm sure I've balanced the scales out.
Now, how does New Hampshire compare with microbrews to other parts of the country? It seems like they're popping up everywhere in the state. So, I mean,
for sure.
More rapid growth here than in other areas of the country?
I think we were way behind a lot of the rest of at least the coast, coastal country. You know, it seems to be the coast that drives the trends.
Sure.
We were behind a lot of the rest of that just because of legislation. But then our state went further than any other state has ever done and set up nano brewery licenses, which I don't think any other state has. So for $240, you can get a nano brewery license in New Hampshire. Now, you've got to jump through a lot of other hoops. There's lots of levels of compliance. You've got to get through the federal government. You have to have bonds. I mean, there's a whole bunch of stuff you got to do. But the state makes their piece real simple for the small guy. And I don't think any other state really has that, which is why the average brewery size in another state, startup is like 17 barrels, and a barrel is 31 gallons. New Hampshire, it's 3 barrels, because there are so many of these 10-barrel and less breweries that are coming onto the scene.
And that's a nano brewery.
That's a nano brewery. I think you're allowed to do, is it 2,000 barrels a year and still be under that license?
Right, yeah. Very good. So how does that come? I mean, with other states, the nano brewery license kind of makes it expedient, and you're able to get started very quickly, I would think.
You can get started on a smaller system where if you were a microbrewery in another state, you'd probably have to get a microbrewery license, which is probably based on big production numbers, it may be just out of the scale of where your margins are able to afford. Mm. As a small guy that's only looking to make 100 gallons a week or less.
So in this case, the state of New Hampshire, the government has been friendly.
Absolutely.
Toward microbreweries.
Well, yeah.
Or nano breweries. Yeah.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way. They've been receptive to what the community really wanted. And I think the proof that they did the right thing is the fact that there's so many nano breweries that are now opening up that they acted on our behalf. It was a beautiful thing.
So what is the licensing like when you get beyond that stage, beyond the nano brewery stage?
New Hampshire pretty much has three classes of brewery, where you're either a nano brewery, really small. You're a brew pub, you can do a little bit more volume-wise, but you're allowed to sell other people's beer, and you have to serve food because you're serving pints. So if you're a nano brewery and you want to have food, they call that a nano plus, and you can do pints instead of 4-ounce samples, but you have to have hot food items. They're still really all part of the nano license. Then the brew pub is sort of in the middle, and then there's full production, which is going to be anything from like Great North that we had in here a few weeks ago. That's the license that they have because they're giant. That's what, you know, Red Hook has, and that's what Anheuser-Busch has. That's the only other tier. And I honestly don't know what the costs are on those. I mean, they're not prohibitively expensive, not like $100,000, but they're certainly not $240 either.
Right, right. And the brew pub is somewhere in between. So,
and I think because we are so close to both Vermont and Southern Maine, that the whole farm-to-table mentality has sort of infused us from those directions, because that was so much more prevalent, especially in Vermont, but Southern Maine too. You know, a lot of them are farmers. They live by what they eat and what they sell that other people eat, and I think New Hampshire's starting to pick up on how important it is to buy local, and I think buying local is starting to finally equate to buying beer from somebody who lives in your neighborhood or at least in your town or your area versus in a factory in Milwaukee.
So I think we have to go to a break, but when we come back, you mentioned Anheuser-Busch, and I have a question about that.
I wonder what that question might be.
You might know.
That's our tease going into the break, right?
We will be right back with Food for Thought.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
It must be Thirsty Thursday, because Food for Thought is about to pour you a liquid lunch with MHP Untapped. Hang out with us while we talk with brewers and beer movers and shakers, discuss New Hampshire beer culture and events, and answer calls to our studio live at 866-823-1077.
Welcome back to Food for Thought. I'm
pretty
Tracy Gregoire. I know
I love
that little intro. It's pretty good. You came up with that yourself.
Huh? Well, my partner, Doc Jones, actually, that's one of his beats from back when we were a band. And another friend of mine, Tony Wolf in Orlando, is a professional voiceover guy, and he put that together.
That's
for
great. I love it. Well, I'm Tracy Gregoire, and filling in for Carol today is the amazing Ken Kell. Thank you, Ken. And we are in studio today with MHP Untapped, with Michael Hapley Pierce, and no guest, but just he's filling us in on some microbrewery news, etc. Before we get back to you, though, I want to thank some of our sponsors. I want to thank Healthy Solutions Spice Blends at spiceblends.com. They have great spices in the grocery, but not in the spice aisle. It's near the meats and the seasonings. Great, great stuff. Love them. Integrity Health Coaching Solutions, Bedford, Londonderry, and North Conway. And IntegrityFit.com, your coaching solutions company. And, of course, Red Arrow Diners, Manchester, Milford, and now open with drive-through in Londonderry, redarrowdiner.com. So thank you to our sponsors. So, my question to you.
Yes.
So, there's some big news. I guess there's probably always big news with major corporations. Anheuser-Busch has made a new purchase.
Well, I don't think it's technically a purchase yet. There's so much levels of compliance on that kind of stuff that they've made the first non-threatening move, I guess. So that they, and it's funny, I read an article about it that talked a lot about the language in the initial offer and how, you know, it's very much applauding them and their company and their philosophy and their products and their ethics and you know, that the sun shines out of wherever and just that they're an amazing company and that that's the language you use when you're doing a non-hostile bid.
Okay.
And then from there, it kind of devolves to the more hostile bid where I guess it turns into yo mama jokes. I'm not sure what happens in the language at that point. But they've made the first movement in trying to consolidate and buy Miller Coors, depending on which company, which country they're in, the product mix is different with because they're so multinational that they're excluded from some markets because of antitrust stuff.
And so in reference to the antitrust, I was looking for the right word there, you think, okay, big national corporate beer company doesn't really have any impact on craft beers and microbreweries, but it really does in some way.
It's not operating in a vacuum, especially considering the rate at which Anheuser-Busch had been buying up what they call middle-size craft breweries lately, mm-hmm. where they're not looking to buy the top 50 biggest craft breweries in the country. They're looking to buy number 51 through 100, mm-hmm. and they're looking to buy one in each region because they want somebody that's well-developed, award-winning, has huge brand loyalty, probably well outside of their footprint, but that's certainly a big piece of what they're doing. So that has some impact on the craft beer world at large. But also the ancillary stuff like distribution definitely gets impacted, despite the fact that a three-tiered system is mandated by, you know, laws most places. A lot of the distributors are actually owned by one of the big boys. Mm-hmm. So that creates some confusion because if you now only have one company doing all the distribution for essentially all the beer, aside from maybe some craft-specific niche folks, that definitely creates a monopolistic situation.
And so what do these, you know, smaller companies, obviously we know how they probably feel about that, but what do they do to kind of get over any hurdles or bumps in the road caused by that?
depends on where you are. So if you're in New Hampshire, you have the ability to change distributors. I mean, it's a pain, but you can do it. And you have multiple choices. And there's folks that have a big player in their portfolio, but they have either a small or a large craft portfolio as well. And then there's people that just do the craft stuff. And you can change if things aren't working. But if you're in Massachusetts, you sign that contract in blood, and it takes a judge to release you from that. And you have to put forth a lot of evidence. And so I think if you're stuck with a distributor someplace like New Hampshire that you don't like, it's not such a big deal because you have options. But if your state laws are tying your hands, then what's happening on the federal level is going to affect you a lot more because there's no federal laws to protect you against having your hands tied. If they declare it's not a monopoly because you can shop it around, well, it turns out in this state you can't shop it around. So,
right.
So no, I'm not sure how that's going to be handled. That may be pushed back to the Commonwealth.
Interesting. You don't think about the politics when you drink beer.
You don't, really.
You do all the time, I know. But 6 years ago, did you?
No. But I'm so mired in that world now that I think about whose beer I'm drinking, not what company, but like, oh, you know, I'm having one of Tom's beers right now, or I'm having one of Rick's beers right now. And if I see them on tap, it's like, I want to buy that because I like that guy. I like that lady. I like their company. Yeah. So I do look at things from a different perspective.
Now you say, lady, how many women get involved with home brewing and maybe graduate to nano brewing and that sort of thing?
Less than 10%.
Less than 10. Yeah,
but really, they're certainly out there. Throwback that I'd mentioned earlier.
That's in Portsmouth, right?
They're technically, I think they're in Hampton.
Oh, okay.
They just moved
right.
A little bit up the road. Beautiful facility. And two ladies started that company, and I think that the majority of the folks that do the brewing there are actually women as well. There's a lot of husband-wife teams, so Robin Lisa was a good example. Mm-hmm. Have I had Rockingham in here?
Not when I was on. Okay. Maybe a different time.
They're also a husband and wife team. Just met up with a friend. Another friend of his is a brewer at Portsmouth and Smutty Nose, and she's an awesome brewer. And so certainly women, I mean, traditionally that was a woman's job. Not that it was woman's work, quote unquote, but it was part of keeping the household. It was you provided dinner and you took care of the laundry and you kept the servants in order if there were servants, or the kids if there weren't.
And you brewed the beer.
And you brewed the beer just like baking the bread.
I mean, that's where the word heard that.
Alewife came from. It was part of the duties in a pre-industrial era home.
You
wouldn't let your man get
today.
Near it because he would just screw it up.
That is funny. So
men have come a long way then.
We have.
It's amazing how
Ken, you've come a long way, baby. Well,
thank you. Thank you, Michael. So when you first started home brewing, maybe it's a little different now, but what about the initial investment, just the investment in getting started?
I actually inherited an overage of gear from Doc Jones. He gave me an old Mr. Beer kit, which is a 2.5 gallon plastic.
That's what
Beer,
I started my husband off with. I think he laughed at me.
That's exactly.
Christmas present.
Yeah, it's like a $50 investment. So if he doesn't like it, it's not like you spent $600 on a nice system.
Yeah, it's a good way to start and try it.
And
it was horrible, but it's a good way to start.
It's a good way to catch the bug and say, okay, what's the next step?
Right.
So I think I did 4 batches on my Mr. Beer.
Mr.
Kit.
Beer.
And then, I bought a plastic bucket, a food grade plastic bucket with a lid and a grommeted hole and a vapor lock bubbler. I bought a kettle keg. I probably spent $20 on that whole apparatus. Mm-hmm. And you ferment in that. And then, it's little pieces of equipment here and there. And then all of a sudden you realize it's like, wow, where did I spend $7,000 on a homebrew set? But you don't have to geek out to that level. For a couple of $100, literally a couple of $100, you can be fully set to make great quality beer without cutting any corners.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much what my husband and my brother-in-law started just that way. I bought him the Mr. Beer kit, and like I said, it was awful. But I think that it sat in a corner for like a year. So that's probably why it was awful. I'm like, when are you going to try that out? I'm like, my presence sitting in the corner. At any rate, they did, and then they got that little bug, just like you said, and then they, went to and got some little pieces and parts here and there, and then they've just slowly started graduating, and they don't do it all the time, but it's a really nice time for them to get together, say, hey, we're going to go brew some beer today, and they'll go over to my brother-in-law's house. Thank goodness.
Well,
I don't want to have that smell in my entire house for a week. My sister-in-law gets to deal with that.
I think sort of from a I don't want to say gender specific because it's going to make me sound sexist, but I think when guys get together, guys like to have projects. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a guy thing. We want to get together and fix your tractor or rebuild your fence or whatever. Maybe it's just an excuse to have cigars and single malt, but that's our, that's what
draft your fantasy team, whatever.
Right? We want to do a thing. And I think
I never thought of that.
Women are more casual about their relation. They just want to get together and chat.
Talk.
Yeah. And so
have
I think
tea,
that's why men are
talk.
Drawn to home brewing is because it's something that we can do, but we can still talk. And we have this pretense of not having to pretend that we have emotions. We're just here to do this thing and, you know, grunt, you know.
I have completely been enlightened. Thank you for that.
That's what I bring.
You know, I want to ask you, Michael, about some of your favorites. And I know I don't want you to, you know, offend anybody that you know, but what are some of your favorites? I mean, what do you look for in a beer?
Well, it depends on what hat I have on. If I just have my I want to drink a beer and enjoy it hat, then I'll drink almost anything as long as it's well made. And by that, I mean there's no major flaws in, you know, an infection or under attenuation, which means too much sugar and not enough alcohol, so it's too sweet, or overcarbonation where it's too bubbly. As long as it was made well, I'll generally enjoy it. But I'm also a certified beer judge, and I don't say that to be a snob. I say that because I have this whole back set of analytical skills that come into play sometimes without me asking them to, and I start overanalyzing when I'm drinking and trying to not necessarily fit it into a box, but at least pick it apart. And in that case, I guess I really like a well-made sour because it's so easy to go slightly astray on that, and a lot of people just don't have the chutzpah to try to make one. They're intimidated, and I think the folks that do and can pull it off commercially, it's a long time investment. You're talking a minimum of 13 months for that beer to sit and take up real estate in a fermenter or a barrel,
wow,
where normally it'd be between, you know, 8 and 21 days for a beer. And I think I just respect that people can do that, and usually the people that do a really good job. So I enjoy a good sour, but I like a good IPA too. I mean, how can you not like IPA and be a craft beer person?
That was very well politically well answered.
Yeah.
He did not drop or miss any names.
Yeah.
But he answered the question.
There you go. Yeah, he did.
As far as local brands, I really kind of like everybody. I like trying the new folks stuff and then just remembering how awesome they are. And maybe I'll move on to the next brewery after that and the next brewery after that, but I'm definitely going to come back. I don't think there's anybody that I've seen in the New Hampshire scene that just has horrible beer. I mean, every one of us puts out a bad beer every once in a while, but overall, I think we all kind of keep each other honest, and there's some amazing beer out there, and people are not afraid to try cool things, and at the same time, they're not afraid to dig into styles that are not pedestrian, but certainly not in your face, and yet just fine-tune them to the point where they can. I think 603 does a wonderful job. They don't make any extreme beers, but all their beers are really well-made, and that's why they sell a ton of them. So I think you've just got such a huge spectrum of brewing in the state. You know, you've got the opposite end of the spectrum where you've got Earth Eagle in Portsmouth, and most of what they make are gruets, which are non-hopped beers. So they're like from before the German purity law of 1514, where you had to use hops in beer and you couldn't use any other bittering additives. There was this whole class of beer that used to exist before that, and almost nobody else brews them, and these guys do almost nothing but that. So it's, you know, there's all kinds of cool stuff happening.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, maybe you can talk a little bit about that non-hop beer. And there was I didn't realize there was a act that said that it had to be, you had to use hops.
Maybe we will talk about that when we come back from the commercial.
All right, you're listening to Food for Thought. So we're going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Food for Thought. I'm Tracy Gregoire, and joining me today is Ken Kell. Thank you, Ken, for filling in for Carol today.
My pleasure.
If you'd like to call into the show, it's number is 866-823-1077. And still with us is Michael Happily Pierce. I'm saying your last name wrong, aren't I?
That's all right. You were close. It's like when the judge says, how do you plea? Howpley.
Howpley. Michael Howpley Pierce from MHP Untapped. So we were going to talk a little bit about non-hopped beer.
Yeah. So traditionally, beer was made with something bitter to sort of offset the sweetness from the malt, which whether it was actual sweetness or sort of perceived sweetness, there was definitely some sweetness left even after fermentation happens. So traditionally, different bittering ingredients would be added. And a lot of those bittering ingredients were somewhat psychoactive, not like hugely, not, you know, Hayden Ashbury kind of psychoactive, but mildly psychoactive. So it was stuff like bog myrtle or bugwort or what's an absinthe? Wormwood. Those kind of ingredients.
Those are horrible names.
Yeah, they're all kind of old school English names.
Not
right?
All things that I would want to drink.
Sounds like something you'd put in a witch's potion.
Yeah, definitely.
So that was traditionally stuff that was used to offset the sweetness and provide some bitterness to balance the flavor of the beer, and also to give it some antiseptic properties so that it would last longer without going bad. Because generally those bittering things, they're bitter because they're trying to tell you that you know there's something wrong with them as a plant, you shouldn't eat it as a human, which means they generally have something that's going to kind of be antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those would make people, you know, sort of uppity and not necessarily what you would want to have in a pub type situation where people were drinking too. So
okay.
In the early 1500s, the German government passed what was essentially the first drug control act called the Reinheitsgebot, which said that you can have malted barley and water and hops in beer, and that's it. And they didn't know about yeast, so they didn't include yeast because that just sort of happened magically, you know, from it was resident in the brewery and it just took hold every time they made a new batch. And you could also use wheat, but you had to use more than 51% of it, which is where you get the German wheat beers. And that was the law. And until very recently, I think the European Union actually had to step in and change that law, but that had still been law in Germany. And so that kind of set the stage for hops being standard issue in beer and people really considering it beer as malt and hops and water.
So the hops didn't have as strong of a characteristics as those other...
They're actually a soporific. They put you to sleep.
Oh, and the other ones made you a little crazy.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know, you think of wormwood, think of like Van Gogh paintings, right?
Okay.
So so they had a better effect where they just made you sort of chill. In fact, if you go to the health food stores, you'll find that a lot of the natural stuff for sleeping will have hops in it as a sleep aid.
So when you get a non-hopped beer product now, are they still using those same crazy ingredients
it
that
depends.
Were basically outlawed back then?
Well, they were out, but they're not outlawed now, strangely enough. They're all stuff that, well, it's almost impossible to find bog myrtle because I've tried. But you can get wormwood. You can get a lot of these other bittering ingredients. You can use sagebrush. You can use all kinds of different stuff. And really, you don't have to use one of them as long as you're offsetting the sweetness in the beer with some other kind of bitterness, which you can get from a lot of different places. And you're not really so worried about infection because nowadays we understand the whole germ theory and how that stuff works. Right. So we protect our product better so it doesn't get infected, regardless of whether or not it has hops as a preservative.
For someone who hasn't had a non-hop beer, should they be cautious
different? It's not like you're going to wander into the free clinic in 18 hours and what just happened to your day and where your pants are. I mean, it's nothing
okay,
like that.
Okay, all right. Just checking.
Not always, anyway.
Now, you wanted to give a little plug again for us for the New Hampshire Film Festival.
So if folks want to come check out Brew Hampshire, which will feature myself and a bunch of other amazing New Hampshire beer personalities, you can see that at 2:10 this Sunday at the 3S Art Space in Portsmouth, or you can also check it out today at 3:40 at the Music Hall at 28 Chestnut Street in Portsmouth as well. And today being every other Thursday I'm on the show, I also have an episode of the Tap Handle Show. Just went live this morning actually with the folks from Rockingham, so you can check that out at thetaphandleshow.com or on iTunes or Stitcher.
After the movie, will you be staying for autographs?
As long as my wife will let me.
That might be a long
true
time.
Story. She has a low tolerance for crowds. I don't know.
Now, speaking of women and wives and all this stuff, is your wife involved in any of the beer stuff that you do?
She's not a beer drinker. No. She's really a pretty private person, so I don't generally try to drag her to stuff. I really want her to see this movie, and she really wants to see it, and she wants to see it on a big screen. So she's coming to do this, but I told her, you know, we'll go have lunch by ourselves before, and I won't hang out too long afterwards, and then we'll come home and have a nice quiet evening. And that's
I can relate. Yeah. I don't do much. I do drink beer occasionally, but I'm not as much into it as my husband. So I just I'm a wine drinker. And by the way, today is National Red Wine Day.
Is it really?
So today is my day. Though we still love a great beer.
Absolutely. Well, we have more guests coming up. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks for having me again. Always good to be here.
Mike Lee Howpley Pierce with us. And again, how can they get you with your podcast?
You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher,
yep.
or you can go to thetaphandleshow.com. There's an embedded player at the top of the homepage with the most recent episode on it.
Very good. All right. Outstanding. 1 hour in the books. Linda Ditch is going to be with us after the 1 o'clock news, and then Shelley Walcott around 1:30 to spice things up
Absolutely.
A little bit here on Food for Thought. From the Beacon Building, 814 Elm Street in downtown Manchester, news is next right here on 107.7 The Pulse.